Welcome to the August 30th, 2017 edition of The Numbers Game. I am your host, Nick Giffen. You can follow me on Twitter at RotoDoc. And with me, as always, my partner in crime, Josh Hermsmeyer. Make sure to follow him on Twitter at FriscoJosh. We've got an interesting show for you today. Obviously, you know, this last weekend of preseason games, there was a lot of major significant injuries. So we're going to talk about, some injury reaction there. We're going to break down different situations and put some numbers behind those injury situations. In the second half of the show, we're going to talk about structure-based drafting. I'm going to be entering some high-stakes fantasy football leagues this year run by the FFPC, so I'm going to talk about my approach to that format. We'll talk about some other formats as well and what Josh and I plan to do with structure-based drafting and when you should and when you shouldn't change your approach based off of the stakes, based off of the structure of the league, etc. So it's going to be a great show. Josh, how was your weekend, man?
Weekend was good. It was a little rough with all those injuries. I'll tell you, I was in a 96-man team league, or 96-team league, and it's funny. I had just finished drafting. I had I had Hunt on the team as well as Edelman. So God's giveth and taketh away in the NFL, and it's interesting that way that it works that way with injuries. I know that an upcoming sponsor of our podcast draft is going to be giving away or paying out people who had each of those three guys on their team ahead of the season. They're just going to basically pay them out as a winner just for all their bad luck before the season even starts. So injuries have been hitting people hard.
Yeah, no doubt. If injuries definitely have hit people hard so far, and that's because there's some pretty, pretty significant players who got injured. Obviously, Julian Edelman is a very big name who got injured. We're gonna talk about how that affects the New England Patriots. Then the same day, Spencer Ware also got injured. Sounds like he's gonna be done for the year with a PCL-LCL combination injury. And then finally, I think it was on the weekend, further in the weekend, so on Sunday, it was Cam Meredith who got injured. He saw the tackle there. It was pretty ugly, and his knee got bent the wrong way, done for the year there as well. So three major players in all sorts of different leagues, especially, if you're in PPR leagues, you're probably focusing on Julian Edelman, for example. Cam Meredith was probably a good play because he was potentially the wide receiver one on the Chicago Bears there. And then Spencer Ware was a guy who I think people liked because he's very efficient. I know we had Joe Holka on earlier this offseason. He loved Spencer Ware just from how talented he was, just both in the passing game and in the rushing game. So a lot of people were hurt by that. Of course, some people were helped by that if you had a lot of Kareem Hunt or maybe some other parts and pieces of the Patriots or the Bears. But we'll talk about all that after I remind you all that you can get a listener's only 30% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass using the RotoViz podcast discount at rotoviz.com/podcast. This will get you a 30% discount to all of our premium NFL content. And it also, of course, helps support the pod. You can also support the pod by subscribing to and rating the RotoViz Radio channel on iTunes. Do that and you'll be eligible to compete against some RotoViz podcasters and writers in a $35 entry best ball league hosted by our friends at the FFPC. The winner of each league will receive a year-long RotoViz pass on top of the cash prize. So go to iTunes, leave a review with your name in it, and email us at rotovizradio@gmail.com. Let us know you want to be in the RotoViz league and we'll definitely get that set up. So, Josh, let's dive into these injuries, and I want to start with the first one that occurred over the weekend, and that was the Julian Edelman injury. He planted his foot, and ACL just snapped. So, first of all, a lot of people, there was kind of a running joke on Twitter. A lot of people were saying, oh, well, now, the slot targets are going to go to Gronk, they're going to go to Cooks, they're going to go to Hogan, they're going to go to the running backs. I mean, everybody's going to play the slot in New England now because of the Edelman injury. What are your thoughts just in terms of the distribution of targets with Edelman out?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, with the Patriots, it's very, very difficult to ever say anything for sure. And even if you look at, first of all, I guess I would say I don't really put too much stock in the slot, right? So Edelman spent about 50% of his snaps there. He played the slot a lot of the times when Gronk was split out wide as an X or a flanker. And so it was just it's more the case that he was their number one wide receiver. Right. And they just moved him all over every formation. So now they no longer have him. But it was probably the case that he wasn't going to be their number one wide receiver this year, or at least it was going to be a more even split between him and Cooks. So the question is really not who's going to play the slot in my mind. The question is who is going to take up the routes that he ran, right? From every formation, from every position on the field. And so I think the guy that's best positioned to do that is probably Hogan. If you look at his racer by depth of target, he kind of wins everywhere, right? He's like, they call him 7-11. He's always open. I mean, he's a guy that kind of has those same kind of skills that Edelman has in the short game and the short area quickness and all that. So now it's not to say that Cooks can't do it. Cooks, I think, can. And you know, God knows the Patriots can, you know, bring out the best in every player that ever sets foot in that building and on those fields. But I think, though, that if you had to pick a guy right now, I don't think you bump up Cooks too terribly much. I think, you know, he's already dialed in for whatever he was going to get. Gronk was going to get what he was going to get. And so you're really talking about Hogan versus, say, Amendola, or maybe someone out of the backfield like White catching more passes. And I think there's maybe something to be said for all of that. But my money is on Hogan being the guy, just because of the way he can be deployed at those depths that are now lost that Edelman was running.
Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting because they do actually have a very different depth profile. Julian Edelman's average yards per target last year was 8.8 and Hogan was 13.8. So a little bit different profile for the two, but I do think Hogan is going to be the guy that kind of comes in and fills in and takes the majority of that work that Edelman vacated. One other thing you mentioned where you talked about Chris Hogan's depth-adjusted racer. Well, of course, you and I both do a lot of depth-adjusted work. I did depth-adjusted yards per target over expectation. Turns out both of our metrics actually correlate pretty highly, R-squared around 0.8. And so Hogan was number one in the NFL in depth-adjusted yards per target over expectation on a raw basis as well as a Z-score basis. And the reason I like the Z-score basis is because when you have a longer depth of target, it's easier to put up a higher number, a much higher number or a much lower number than at the shorter distance for yards per target over expectation. So essentially we're scaling to the depth as well and putting it in terms of Z-scores related to the depth. So that's comparing Hogan to other, you know, people who have yards per target around his average yards per target as well, and he still ends up number one in the NFL, 2.82 standard deviations above the mean for people who are around his depth of target. So just incredible efficiency there with Tom Brady for Hogan. So I'm all over, you know, the fact that I think Hogan will be the beneficiary. Where I hesitate a little bit is, like, where do I draft him? So, you know, obviously he was going 18, 19, 20, sometimes even undrafted in like best ball leagues. But now, where do you, 12-team PPR league, where would you be drafting Hogan?
Oh boy, I probably wouldn't be drafting him before the 10th round. And it'll let someone else reach on him. I was never that excited about the Patriots receiving corps, unless you're talking about Gronk. I'm much more excited about Cooks now. I moved him up to the top of my wide receiver two tier, or my second tier of wide receivers. There will be wide receiver ones within that tier. My second tier wide receiver, he's right up there at the top now. I mean, if he had stayed with Drew Brees last year, my air yards model said he was a top five, top six wide receiver this year. So I was really bullish on him. It was just that the target pressure in New England and all the mouths that needed to be fed kind of really dampened my enthusiasm. So now I'm a little bit higher on Cooks, just because I think he's going to get enough volume to be a solid second-tier wide receiver. But I don't know that you really want to pay up for Hogan right now. I mean, if his ADP goes into the ninth, eighth round, I don't know that I would rather take him than someone like, well, sometimes you can get Kenny Britt there.
Yep. It's funny because I we just did a compilation piece at RotoViz about Chris Hogan. I think it might come out at some point between when we record this and when the episode is released. But the two guys I mentioned in my Hogan take were Hogan and Kenny Britt. And the reason is I basically did a back-of-the-napkin calculation to figure out what Hogan's ceiling is probably for targets. And it's around Kenny Britt's floor, in my opinion. So I don't think you can take Hogan really better than a 10th rounder, because Kenny Britt's ADP right now is the 10th round. Of course, I think it should be higher, but I think Britt's kind of going towards his floor, and I think Hogan in the 10th round would be maybe towards his median, but probably on the ceiling side of things, just with some back-of-the-napkin calculations. But I am 100% with you on Brandon Cooks as well, that I think he's kind of gone into that second half of my wide receiver one tier. I really wanted to try to get him in the second round a couple times. I was doing some drafts this past weekend, and I was trying to get him in the early to mid second round if I could. I had a couple picks that were later, like at 1.09, I think I got A.J. Green, and I was hoping when it made it back around to me, I'd get A.J. Green and Brandon Cooks. Didn't quite work out, but still ended up with some pretty good teams. But Brandon Cooks is definitely going pretty early. Let's flip over to the next situation, which occurred the same day, and that was the Spencer Ware injury. Sounds like he's going to be done for the rest of the year. So Kareem Hunt, of course, is the guy that steps into that role. I know you're pretty high on Kareem Hunt. What was it about him you liked even before the Spencer Ware injury?
So I'm a big proponent of evasiveness or breaking tackles or whatever you want to call it. I don't put a lot of stock. I know that there's athleticism. There's a certain amount of athleticism, and excess athleticism certainly helps in the NFL, especially at the running back position. But I worry that we overweight it sometimes if a guy doesn't look like he's in a good position to get a solid amount of volume. And I think I kind of put CMC McCaffrey into that bucket. I don't know that the rest of the world is aligning for him to be a stud, unlike, say, Zeke, who seemed to check all our boxes last year and then went to a team that had a great line and had great opportunity slotted right in as the top running back, that kind of situation. Whereas with Hunt, it certainly seemed like there was a path to him being a difference maker this year in the second half of the year, even with Spencer Ware. Spencer Ware is the type of running back who catches a lot of deeper targets and didn't really he wasn't bad last year between the tackles and just kind of as a first and second down back. But you could definitely see a path to Hunt getting some of those carries at some point in the season. And then finally, he was a 7th, 8th round pick, and that's what I love, because I'm a zero RB guy this year with my PPR leagues, and he was just around, and I loved his upside, and that's what you're looking for in the zero RB team is, get a guy with upside in the 6th, 7th round, fill in with some early down grinders that are late picks like Jay Stu or something, just to, take the pressure off the early season before guys start dropping off, getting injured. And so I loved Hunt all year long. He was my favorite rookie running back. But mostly it was a question of cost, right? It was a question of that ADP falling in line with my strategy. And now that he is going to be a 4th-round pick and a 3rd-round pick, I will be owning zero of him moving forward.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting, because I was kind of on the opposite. I really didn't like Hunt as a prospect. I think there's a lot of metrics that kind of go against him. You mentioned some of the athletic measurables there. His 40 time relative to his weight was not very good, and that's one of the things that really dinged him in both the RB Prospect Lab we have at RotoViz as well as Kevin Cole's RB Prospect model. So, Kareem Hunt, it gave Hunt only a 8% chance of having an RB1, I think it was an RB1 year in the first 3 years of his NFL career, which was pretty low. It was on the very bottom end of Kevin's results for all the rookie prospects. Now, of course, there's other things that there are to like the number of passes he's caught. So there probably is some agility there. But I think it was interesting, because another thing that Kevin Cole has done is his regression tree. Kareem Hunt fell on the worst note of the regression tree. And a lot of that is, again, athletic measurables there. There's certainly the production in college, 113.5 yards per game in his final year, 3.2 receptions, just under a touchdown per game. So, in general, Hunt is an okay prospect by when you combine production and combine numbers. But he didn't really stand out. And based off of what Joe Holcutt did and his analysis there at 4-for-4, I was buying into Ware certainly as a very efficient back. I still wasn't liking where he was going into the 5th, early 6th. I was kind of, I don't love the 6th round in general this year in terms of PPR, 12-team PPR drafts. But it kind of kept me away from Kareem Hunt at his, at his 10th, 11th round price, I think, is where he was going before the injury. Now, I get it. He probably is still a very good zero RB prospect in the 10th or 11th round if you're doing that. And, of course, now with the injury, he was a great 10th or 11th round pick. But he looks like he's going somewhere in the 3rd to 5th, sometimes even 6th round. I got him in the 6th round. I got him 6.09 the day after it was announced that Ware would be done for the year. So it really depends, I guess, on the stakes you play and the format as to where he's going to go. But if he falls into that fifth round. I'm grabbing him all day, but I think he'll probably wind up in the third or fourth round ADP. Do you have any other thoughts on that situation there?
Yeah, no, I think the only other thing I'd mention is that if you read Sean Siegel's top five zero RB targets, I think he made it in at number three or four. So, you know, even despite, and this was before the injury, so even despite, you know, his low athletic measurables and really kind of a so-so kind of college production profile, there was, you know, there were reasons to like him that I saw too, and that's why I was going after him. It's not that I discount all of those metrics. It's just that I highly weight opportunity and potential opportunity, and that's how I measure upside more so than athletic measurables.
There you have it. I totally agree with that. So before we move on to the Cam Meredith injury situation, I just wanted to say that I'm so excited for NFL season because, of course, that also brings back betting season on the NFL. And ever since I started at Numbers Game, people have been asking me for advice on who to bet on, you know, over, under, all that stuff. Well, let me tell you something. Where you bet is just as important as who you're betting on. So that's why I always tell people to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie's been in the business for years, and their reputation is rock solid. They do a 100% cash bonus. So off the bat, you're making money for doing absolutely nothing, and who doesn't love that? They also have the fastest payouts, just 2 business days. So I would only recommend, of course, to you guys a site that's been good to me, and that's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game live betting. They have the most rewarding player perks in the business and an all-new mobile site that makes wagering on the go a total breeze. Join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit with a 100% bonus. Use promo code ROTONUMBERS to activate your offer. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Let's move on to the next situation there, and that is the Cameron Meredith injury. I was a little bummed out because I had Cameron Meredith in a draft that I had just done the day before his injury. And now I went zero RB, so he was my wide receiver, you know, 5 or 6 or something like that. Probably my wide receiver 6, I think. But was still a little bummed about that. I haven't done too many redrafts yet, and so, you know, obviously we've done the Scott Fishbowl one, but then I really just started loading up my redraft leagues this past weekend, and you know, the very first one I did of those was a Cam Meredith draft, and then the next day he got hurt. So I was a little bummed by that, but what does that do for the Chicago Bears? Obviously, Kevin White probably becomes wide receiver 1 there now, if he wasn't already beforehand. There's some other wide receivers that come into play. Deontay Thompson ended up playing 18 snaps, which was the same number that Kevin White played after the Cam Meredith injury in that preseason game. And then Kendall Wright played the next most with 12 out of the 18 snaps there. So what do you make of the situation in Chicago?
This is a tough one, right? So Kevin White is not a guy I'd pay for, probably. He's going to go up in price when he's not proven anything in the NFL yet. Very likely, well, not very likely, but it is likely he's a bust, or at least more likely than not. And so I don't know that you pay for him. I don't know that you pay for the tight end Miller. I don't know that you want a piece of this offense is pretty much where I come down. But if you had to grab a guy, and for instance, if you already had drafted Cameron Meredith, who my air yards model liked quite a bit, who I was a little down on, I thought he's going probably about where his ADP said he was worth. I thought he's pretty steady value at his ADP. But now that he's down, if you had already drafted him, I think Kendall Wright's probably the play. I think Kendall Wright's a guy who, in the past, has had over 130 targets in a season. He's been super efficient over his career at most depths. If they trot him out there and they pepper him with targets, I think he'll return value on free. That's not saying much, right? Because you can get him pretty much anywhere right now. You don't need to do much to return value on free. But I think that if I was going to own a piece of that offense this year, I think Wright's the guy. And in fact, I've been stashing him in some dino leagues prior to this, but I would fade White. That is probably going to be a higher ADP than what he was going at before, which I thought was too high, and that's about it. Glennon is not an inspiring quarterback.
No, Glennon's definitely not an inspiring quarterback, and I think that's one of the other drawbacks to playing him, you know, Kevin White there, is just the fact that he does get a lot of deeper targets, and Glennon just doesn't have the arm that he should for being an NFL quarterback. I mean, that's one of the big knocks on him. His ball velocity was under 50, and there's only been, I think, one quarterback ever to have, at least since 2008 and having all these ball velocity numbers, that has had a ball velocity of 50 or below that also had a AYA of 7.0 or greater while starting at least half the games. And that's Tyrod Taylor, who's done it one time. So it doesn't look promising for Glennon and Kevin White, the combination there. Kevin White was old and, you know, he was productive in college, but he did it at an old age. And now he's missed 2 years with injuries, 2 years in a row. I'm sure that probably doesn't help his overall fitness and ability to separate and things like that. And he already wasn't, in my opinion, a very good prospect. So, yes, he was an athletic freak, but how much of those injuries hurt him? So I'm with you, not on Kevin White, never have been. I wrote an article last year about how I just didn't think he'd even be a top 50 wide receiver, even if he played the whole year. I still don't think he's that good. But I agree with you on Kendall Wright. Obviously, with the Glennon arm strength stuff, I think Kendall Wright's short average depth of target there is probably something that's going to, I think, benefit him there. And really where I like Kendall Wright is week one DFS. So if you guys are DFS players, I think Kendall Wright is like the nuts play here. I'm going to write about him in my article when we have, our first DFS article out. I'm going to do kind of a pre-run this week, talk about some things we should look for. And one of the things I'm going to highlight is average depth of target for the player, so not average depth of target, but efficiency across a range of depths, which we'll be using your data there at airyards.com, and also from the defensive side. So I'm going to show you how Kendall Wright matches up towards how Atlanta has performed the last 2 years under the same defensive coordinator and coach. So not the same defensive coordinator, but the secondary coach became the new defensive coordinator, so I think it's pretty applicable there. You add in Glennon, you add in the fact that they'll be playing from behind against Atlanta. I think this is a situation where Kendall Wright at $3,200 on DraftKings is somebody I don't mind running out as part of an Atlanta stack. So if you stack Matt Ryan with Julio Jones, maybe even possibly Devontae Freeman, and then run it back with Kendall Wright, I think that is actually a viable play in a millionaire maker, because Kendall Wright only needs to get you, five catches, 60 yards, and a touchdown, and he's more than worth it. And I think that's certainly doable for Kendall Wright against Atlanta, given the way the game should flow. So I'm just pretty excited about him in week one. But when we talk season-long leagues, it's a little bit different. It's going to be, I think, a hit or miss situation there with the Bears in general. Probably a lot of miss in the past game. So I definitely think the Meredith injury really removes all of the Bears players for me, other than, like you mentioned, Kendall Wright as a deep stash. Any last thoughts on injury situations before we move on?
No, I think that's plenty. These injuries have been rough this year. I hope we don't have to talk about them again next week.
Yeah, hopefully not, but I think it's cool. I mentioned DFS a little bit, and I'm just really excited for the season. We're just over, I guess later this week we're going to be 1 week away from opening day. On Thursday, we'll be 1 week away from opening day, so that's going to be pretty incredible that we're just over a week away. So now I want to shift gears a little bit. I did tell you at the top of the show that I'm going to be doing some FFP high stakes leagues. And of course, FFPC is celebrating their 10th year as the home of season-long high stakes fantasy football. Obviously, if you love their best ball format, they've got you covered with $35 entry best ball leagues. And then all the way up to these high roller leagues that I like to play in this year. I know, a number of RotoViz guys will be doing FFPC drafts. Pat Corain and Pete Overzet did one last year, and they wrote about it every week. So I'm going to probably throw in multiple entries into the high stakes leagues this year. And if that's not good enough, they've also introduced a brand new concept a season long, which is the best ball double up leagues with a 100% payout. So that's right, 100% payout. Simply draft a $35 or $250 entry FFP Draft Experts League, finish in the top half of the league, and you'll double your entry fee for next year. So double up leagues are the best deal in fantasy over at FFPC. Get on them and start drafting now. Don't miss the FFPC experience. Go to myffpc.com and register now. That's myffpc.com. So let's talk a little bit about that FFPC format, because I think it's an interesting one. When Sean talked about his zero RB strategy, he really geared it towards, when you have three wide receivers and a flex, maybe two running backs you're starting and one tight end. Well, FFPC is a little bit different because it's not only is it PPR, but it's tight end premium. And instead of three wide receivers starting slots, you only have two wide receivers starting slots, but you add another flex. So sum it up, two running back, two wide receiver, two flex, and one tight end to start there. So I'm curious if that would change your approach to things in terms of maybe a structure-based draft strategy in FFPC formats. I know I have my thoughts, but I want to hear your thoughts first.
Sure. Yeah, I think that when you increase the number of flex spots, you decrease the edge of any structure-based strategy. So flex is basically the idea behind it, you know, and the whole win the flex concept is to get the best players at those spots. The structure-based strategies is to say, well, we want to just take a lot of a type that we must roster, and we want to take the type, we want to load up on the type that has the lowest variance so that when we spend those high draft capital picks, we're more assured of getting a return on that capital. And if you can lower that variance relative to your competition, then you have an edge. And when you're in a point where, well, after the first two slots are filled, those other slots can be filled with premium tight ends, you know, well, tight end premium players. They can be filled with maybe some, you know, high upside running back plays. They can be filled with, you know, whatever it might be. Then you're really, your edge starts to dwindle because now you're looking at what is the defining factor of a good team, and that's filling those slots with the best possible player independent of position. And I think that, you know, if you're like, I play in a league right now where it's five flex. And it's an auction every year, you know, it's a dino league, so you keep quite a few. But the idea really is when you get to that point where it's just a five flex, where everything is flex and there is no structure, then your structural edge is gone completely. And I think in the FFPC, if I had to pick between, like, you know, am I a great structural drafter or am I a guy who can really evaluate talent better than my competition, I would almost certainly pick the latter just because of those added flexes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I 100%, you know, I definitely agree in some ways, but I still think we only got two flex here. It is tight end premium. It's PPR. And we do know that, in at least if you looked at my Win the Flex article or RotoViz, that wide receiver still has the much better equity, especially as you get towards the you know, the top portion of the draft. It's just a much better equity there. So the double flex, I think it's still probable that I'm going to want to roster wide receivers relative to running backs. You add in the tight end premium element, and that maybe changes the calculus a little bit. You know, maybe you can do the double elite tight end strategy that I like doing. The problem is, I think the tight end ADP actually gets overinflated, kind of like running back ADP there, which does bring down running backs, I guess, a little bit. So it really muddles things. I still think a structure-based strategy will work. I definitely think I want upside basically with every pick because of the format of the main event here, where you know, the top two advance on to the next round, and also if you win the tournament, you advance on to the championship round. So up to four, you know, people could advance up to the championship round, I believe it is, and then the championship round is just, you know, really top heavy. So I want upside with basically every pick I'm gonna take. So I'm going to probably avoid safer players like Jarvis Landry, even though I really like him in PPR formats. I think, though, I'm just going to be drafting for upside with every pick, because you don't need every upside pick to hit. You just need enough of them to hit to really crush your, you know, your top-heavy structure there. So I'm just going to be drafting with upside in mind. That doesn't mean I will go zero RB. I probably won't go zero RB. I probably will be wide receiver heavy is kind of the structure I'll be approaching with. But if I see a running back value, especially one that has a lot of upside, I'm definitely going to be taking a running back. I'm still going to be looking at elite tight ends, but I think I'm going to be looking at upside with my tight ends. So I like guys like Gronk, Jordan Reed, Tyler Eifert, these guys that have massive touchdown upside week to week to week. And if they avoid injury, will be, you know, really good value at their ADPs. Now, again, I mentioned that tight end ADP does get pushed upward, but I think, you know, if you take two tight ends or something like that, you can and have enough upside there, I think you can be okay, because everybody is going to be taking tight ends anyway, and I don't think a late tight end strategy with PPR works so well. I'm going to be avoiding guys like Hunter Henry, who is only, if it's a PPR league, and then you add in a half an extra point at tight end for per reception, Henry's not going to get a ton of receptions because he's splitting with Antonio Gates. Same with O.J. Howard and Cameron Brait. Those guys, you knock them down a little bit because they're splitting some of that tight end work. So it's definitely a situation where I think Hunter Henry will probably get overdrafted. There will be guys that I think will get overdrafted, but I'm going to look for just pure upside in these formats, and I think it's going to come through Reed, through Gronk, through Eifert, these touchdown machines that if they're healthy, will probably win a league. So I'm going to be looking to draft those guys in this type of a structure. You mentioned, so we did a little Rotoviz roundtable at Rotoviz this week, and it was about structure-based drafting and about roster construction in general. And one of the cool questions that Brian Malone, who kind of was moderating the chat there, was a Slack chat, he kind of moderated the chat. One of the cool questions he asked was, if you could build like a Madden-style drafter, and you could allocate draft awareness points, projection accuracy points, you know, player projection accuracy points, and structural-based drafting points, what would you do? And you and I talked a little bit about this beforehand, that it may be a little bit different at the lower stakes than at the higher stakes. So why don't you talk me through your reasoning there of what you might do differently at low stakes versus high stakes?
Yeah, so low stakes, I think that there is a secular edge that, in other words, an edge that doesn't go away with structure-based drafting. And so year over year, you can trot out your structure-based strategy, whether it's late-round QB coupled with zero running back, coupled with some two tight end one once in a while. And you can leverage all those strategies to really create a powerful edge that then you can pilot throughout the season with savvy waiver wire pickups, being on the ball, you know, following the news, doing all the things that a good owner does, to really just kind of, I don't want to say be unbeatable, but you can be in the playoffs most years. And so I would allocate my Madden points to structural drafting in almost all, you know, normal leagues, you know, basically friends and family leagues, coworker leagues, even semi moderately stakes leagues, like some Apex leagues that we sometimes play in that are a lot of fun. I would definitely use zero RB, this year, especially. In the high stakes leagues, I would probably allocate, you know, more towards player evaluation, because I think that the structural drafting element kind of goes by the wayside. And let me explain why. In a year like this, we could say zero RB looks to win. And then we say, yep, take a step back and go, well, why are we recommending it? And we're recommending it because of these kind of macro trends. And we notice when we look at them that touchdowns are way up for running backs this year. We don't expect that to reoccur. Touchdowns for wide receivers were way down. We don't expect that to reoccur. We expect regression to the mean. But when you do that type of analysis, that's not structural thinking. That's value-based thinking. And so, you know, really a lot of the arguments that we deploy this year in favor of zero RB, even in high-stakes leagues, which I would do perhaps this year, are really value-based in thinking. And so that's why I say when you're at the highest levels, you need to really do all of that kind of analysis as well as pinpoint players. A reason why zero RB might also work this year is because we have guys we're targeting late that we think are going to provide value above their ADP, guys like Britt, guys like Garcon, guys that we're targeting in a lot of leagues that maybe other people are misvaluing. And again, that's value-based thinking. Structure-based thinking is something where you kind of put all that value thinking out of the ways by the wayside, and you just say, I'm going to do this strategy. I'm going to take this number of guys, this number of rounds, and that is going to give me an edge. And I just don't think you can think that way in high-stakes leagues where there's just too many smart, sharp guys.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. I think this is definitely something that makes sense because you mentioned like that mid-round value there with the Brits, the Garcons. Even guys like Eric Decker probably have a chance to put up a lot of touchdowns this year. But they're all in that 6th, 8th, 9th, 10th round range there, and that there's still a lot of value early on as well. I think Stephon Diggs is a huge value. I think somebody like Emmanuel Sanders is probably a really big value. So there's value all over up and down the draft range at wide receiver. And when there's a lot of value up and down the range there, when there's sharp players, you just want to really focus on upside and value, I think, because those sharp players will be we'll be reducing all of that value there. But when you do find value, I think you do need to go and take it and just take it and run with it. So if that means a lot of them are finding that wide receiver value early as well, and they're drafting Diggs in the third, and they're drafting Manny Sanders in the fourth, and they're drafting Keenan Allen in the second, or things like that, then all of a sudden that opens up running back value. So, you know, if that makes Kareem Hunt fall into the fifth round, I'll probably be scooping him up there. So it really just depends on, you have to be a little more flexible, a little better with your player projections as you added. So I think I would add a lot to player projections in this, you know, in a high stakes scenario, less towards, you know, towards structural based drafting, but I'd also add some towards draft flexibility, draft awareness, because, you know, obviously, you do have to go in with a value-based mindset. You do also have these structural concepts that you know work, but if things just go way too far in one direction, you have to be willing to adapt as well, and adapt for value, which is kind of, in a way, adapting to your projections. So I think it balances those three components a whole lot more, and you know, one of those situations becomes, I guess it's the structure-based drafting situation becomes greatly reduced at the high stakes level. Real quick, I wanted to talk just a little bit in general about, you know, go back to your flex thing here, where you've got one flex versus four flexes, super flex, or four wide receivers. You mentioned at the top there that if you have, for example, like four wide receivers, you're going to be drafting a lot of wide receivers. I want to take a really weird example and throw this at you. What if you had a league where maybe you started one quarterback, three running backs, and two wide receivers, one tight end, one flex? Does that mean all of a sudden you go running back heavy just because there's more running back slots available? Let's say it's still PPR. Or do you try to fill the, you know, wide receivers and the flex early because, you know, those are the, in general, they're going to be the value positions. Although, as I mentioned, there's value up and down the draft this year at wide receiver. What do you do in a situation, just maybe in a general year, not necessarily even in 2017?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, if you have to roster three running backs, then, you know, there's two schools of thought that you kind of just kind of laid them out. Is, you know, is the lower variance by taking two very, very high-end wide receivers? And by lower variance, I mean when you draft them in the high spots, you're assuming you're going to get lots of production, and the bet is that you will get it, and you will get it more often than you will from the high-end running backs. So if the bust rate on early round running backs remains large enough of a difference from wide receivers, I still think you can do a zero RB in that situation. People will be loading up on those running backs because they will think, I have to get those three filled, right? And so they forego these, and safe is the wrong word. Again, it's a lower variance play. There are high scoring players, and the error on your projection is lower on them. So you can gain an edge on the field if you take two of the very, very best and fill out your wide receiver slots with them. So I don't think you forego a zero RB structural strategy if there are lots of slots that must be filled by a specific position. The only time the structural strategy starts to fall apart and falls apart completely is when, like, for instance, there is no structure in a five flex auction. Like, there's no draft structure and there's no roster structure. It's value, baby. That's it. You gotta know how to price these guys. You gotta pay what they're worth. You gotta know when value's available. You gotta be good at the auction. And then you need to deploy them correctly in whatever combination you see fit on a week to week basis. And so, if you're a commissioner of a league and you want to get rid of structure based strategies, you think they're annoying and something you'd rather not have a part of your experience, do an auction and do a five flex.
Definitely. I should remind everybody that we do have the auction, you know, the definitive auction strategy guide up at RotoViz. Dave Cabin just put that out the end of this past week. It was just such an incredible read for auction strategy. It has auction values. It has tiers. It has all that stuff. But it also has all the theory behind auction. Who you should nominate, when, should you bid up another player, not, you know, all of that different stuff. There's just so much theory behind auctions, in addition to value, you know, in terms of nominating strategy, in terms of psychology. It's just such a very, very cool format, and I'm happy to say that I actually won the RotoViz mock auction, I believe. I don't think anybody else had a better roster than mine, so I just wanted to throw that out there, but you're in that one, right, Josh?
Yeah, I screwed up and I took Brady for $22. It was a bad, bad deal. Left a little bit of money on the table that I could have used later in the draft to strengthen the team. It was a rookie move, actually.
Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun though. We had a good time. I somehow ended up with DeAndre Hopkins for $20 when everybody else in his ADP range was going $25, $30, $35, $40. So that one kind of was a fluke right there. I was glad to get him, but that was a lot of fun. And I'm with you, man. Auction drafts are just so cool. They definitely make you have to pay attention more to value, to players, to upside, to, you know, not necessarily roster construction strategy, but just making sure you're not selling yourself short at any of the positions. Because you know, if you sell yourself short on the running back position and you know, you overpay for some back end running backs, you're going to be in trouble there, because then you won't have enough value for the wide receiver position. So, you know, zero RB can backfire in an auction. It also can be very good in an auction. It just depends on, as you mentioned, the number of flexes there. So that's going to do it for this edition of the Numbers Game. For Josh Ernstmeyer on Twitter at Frisco Josh, I am Nick Giffen. You can follow me on Twitter at RotoDoc. Thanks for tuning in, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week for the preview of week one of the 2017 NFL season.
Ooh, I just got a little goosebumps.
Thank you for listening to The Numbers Game, a sports analytics podcast powered by RotoViz Radio. Please review the podcast in iTunes under the established RotoViz Radio feed. Contact us via email, numbersgamepod@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter, @numbersgamepod. Our theme music is provided by Black Ant. And remember, you can always support the podcast by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the Football Podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.